The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by the man who is the chief executive of On Post. He's also chair of the Dublin City Task Force, which we'll talk about in a while, which is the task force aimed at looking at Dublin to say, look, what can we do in terms of making this a more habitable city for those who live in it and a more attractive city for those who want to visit it? Before that, David, On Post and your tenure in it, it strikes me that there are few publicly owned companies that have faced a bigger external challenge than On Post has. That shift from standard snail mail letters to becoming a parcel service. And there are few that are seen as much as a poster boy for what transformation can be within the public sector. Am I right in that?
Well, it's very kind of you to say so. I mean, I think it's always an ongoing battle because mail volume decline as people switch to email or whatever other form, you know, that continues. And each year we're 30 or 40 million worse off than the prior year, with the volume that goes down. So we have to start each year by finding an extra 40 million of profit. But we've done it and the team has done it extremely well.
Presumably you're up against serious heavy hitters because the other people in that space are the DHLs, the FedExes, the Amazon.
We are, but you know, and the reason I went to On Post is I just thought, what a phenomenal brand. I mean, can you find a brand that is more integrated into Irish life? And that's what we've really leveraged, is what that brand is and what it stands for. It's a very human brand. It stands for the common good. People love their postmen and postwomen and post office clerks. And if you could just modernize the system behind it, then the opportunity is huge. And that's what we've had to do and say, become an e-commerce company. You know, the biggest industry in the world is retailing. And suddenly it's coming down our channel. And that's fantastic.
But all of that is dead easy to say and dead easy to strategize. Very difficult to do, I would have thought, in IR terms and in organizational terms with what is a state-owned company. No?
I think the IR is fascinating. The unions are essential business partners. If you consider them to be pesky unions, you're not going to get anywhere. They have to be respected if they're going to respect you. And we've built a very strong relationship with our unions. I don't pretend that it's easy all the time. It can be tough negotiations. They do really well for their members. But they are business partners. And actually, it was the unions who told me when I went in, they said, David, we've got to get back into parcels because On Post got out of parcels for various reasons. And we then worked out the formula to do that, which was not to have a separate parcel company, but to deliver it in the same routes as letters. And that means you shared the cost and that made it possible.
And is that not major upheaval? Because I assume that has an impact on the postal delivery person. It has an impact on the kind of facilities you provide because a bicycle can't handle all the parcels. You have
to change everything. It's a very physical world and the volumetrics of parcels compared to letters are so extraordinarily different. And yeah, that's why we've electric vehicles, because somebody said put 780 diesel vehicles onto the streets of Dublin. And I said, no, let's go electric. And there's a big story, famous story in the company about that now. But that meant that, yeah, for all the postmen and postwomen, the jobs has changed enormously and they've had to deal with that and cope with it. But they do. And they've done it amazingly. I am in awe of what the staff do. Absolutely in awe of it. And, you know, I think of during the pandemic, and I often wonder now when I hear of people saying, oh, I want to work from home, or particularly in our office, oh, I want to work from home. And then I look at postmen and postwomen every single day in the pandemic were at work at 7 in the morning, 6:30 in the morning to deliver and keep every delivery route open. And that cost us a lot of money, but we did it.
Can I ask about your experience of taking over? Because you shifted from being the boss of TV3 to being the boss of On Post. Massively different industries in almost every way, in the cultural norms in terms of IR and in the scale of operations, the physicality of the business. How steep was the learning curve? How much did you discover you didn't know when you arrived in?
I knew very little. That's always been my life. I've been in a number of different sectors, and the joke is I stay just long enough and then leave before I'm found out. And I tell you what it does do. It makes you rely on the people in the industry. It makes you really rely on your team, the experts in the company. And so you have that advantage. I have the advantage that I don't double guess them, because I can't double guess them. I can't come in and say, oh, look, actually, it would be better if you delivered parcels in this route rather than that route. I haven't a clue. I'm learning a bit, but you know, we have the people in the company who do have a clue. And that's, in a sense, is, to me, is what leadership is. Provide leadership, agree the general direction, agree the strategy with everybody, and then let people get on with their jobs. I mean, it's that principle of subsidiarity. At the lowest level, a decision can be made is where it should be made in a company.
You've made a couple of significant strategic moves for Onpost. One, you departed the GPO as headquarters and moved to a new building down by the point called the XO building. Why?
We moved because the GPO is in a state of disrepair. You know, behind the first 20 feet, behind the post office, there's an office building that was built in the 1920s after the Rising. It was refurbished in 1985, and that now needs to be gutted and rebuilt. And there were ceilings falling in and things like that. So parts of it are okay, and we still have some people in the parts that are okay. Moving was also about realizing something. Moving to a really super modern building, best technology and everything. And when the Taoiseach at the time, Leo Varadkar, came to open it, I said to him, I said, Leo, you know, when we're in the GPO and we talk about being a DigiCore or an e-commerce company or a fintech, it all kind of sounded faintly ludicrous. But here in the XO, it sounds not just possible, but probable. And, you know, we look over the port, we see at the hardest working port, we see the ships coming in every day, and 30% of everything that comes into Ireland goes through Onpost. 30% of the customs declarations in Ireland are from Onpost. So, you know, it's a phenomenal amount that we deal with.
One third of all goods travelling into the country is handled by Onpost.
30% by items are, so items that go through customs. And yeah, so it's a quite extraordinary amount.
Now, the GPO brings us, to some extent, it is the sort of the overlap in the Venn diagram in your two gigs, because the CEO of Onpost on one side, the other, the chair of Dublin City Task Force. And one of the things that you are suggesting in the Task Force report, one of the big blocks of the Task Force report, is changing the way the city is lived in and transforming the GPO. You say some bits of it are okay. Are those the bits that you were offering to RTE?
No, I think what we're offering to whoever it might be, whether it's RTE should go in there or whether it should be a National Museum of the Irish Nation, which I think could be fantastic, a bit like the African American Museum in Washington, D.C., you know, a really world-class museum to attract people. Whatever it is, the building has to be rebuilt. So it would be rebuilt to accommodate that. So, you know, you can't put RTE into an old building like the GPO, or you can't put a world-class museum into it. You have to build it around that. And that's what we would propose. But it's such an iconic building. It's so important. It's too important for a task force itself to decide. And that's why all we've done is kind of nudge the conversation to say, consider these options. And the RTE option came up through a number of different people. I think it's an interesting one. BBC in London, Broadcasting House, they have their radio studios and a TV news studio. And that's a formula that could work, and there would be space for that. But it's just one example, and that's an example of kind of transparent democracy. But another one, as I say, could be a Museum of the Irish Nation, which I think could have massive benefits. If, you know, we've a diaspora of 80 million people, do they have enough to do when they come to Dublin? Probably not.
Now, this is part of the task force's ambition. The ambition is broad and fairly reaching. You talk about increasing the number of guards on the street by 1,000 in the centre of the city. You talk about changing the housing so that people live above the shops, radically changing social housing so that you bring vibrancy back to those areas, taking vacant sites and turning them into amenities so that you have pop-up festivals or markets or whatever else it might be. all well and good in print, do you think you have a snowball's chance of getting the resources, the mandate and the government support to deliver?
I think we have a snowball's chance. I can't say how big a chance we have, but we're going for it. And I think the Taoiseach is absolutely sincere in his intention with the task force and sees the need for what needs to be done in Dublin. He, you know, at the launch, there was the Taoiseach, there was also Minister for Public Expenditure, there's the Minister for Local Government, there's the Lord Mayor, this is a heavyweight commitment. And Pascal Donoghue committed to saying the funds would be available. And we're very clear, we need an extra billion in capital expenditure now in the city, and we need an extra 150 million in operation expenditure. And that's for things like caretakers and flats and city wardens and more street cleaners. And often that's the bit that's forgotten. People love talking about infrastructure, but actually the most important infrastructure is the people providing the services. It is a wholly realizable plan, because it wasn't a set of people just inventing something new. There's plenty of people doing new stuff that's more exciting. There's a brilliant project, for example, the Dublin Lido, the swimming pool in George's Dock, which I think is great. But that's not what this plan was about. What are the real things on the ground that need to be done? And it came from, you know, the Assistant Commissioner of the Guards, the head of the City Council for Dublin One, the head of the NTA, people who have to deliver. We also spoke to all the political parties, all the local representatives, and each of them can find, if they look at the report, they will find their recommendations in
there.
But
without wishing to be overly sceptical, when you look at all of the recommendations within the report, they land on an owner, and the owner is delineated, and very often you discover that it is a government department, that it's either, it could be DCC in some instances, but there's a lot of Department of Housing, government departments that have a lot of other fish to fry.
And I think that is a real issue. And that is the real danger. And you're right to highlight it, Anton. You know, the staying on an agenda, keeping your item at the top of an agenda is very, very hard. The governance for Dublin needs to change. And, you know, the Citizens' Assembly said we should have an elected mayor. The parties supported that. But we need to make the steps towards that. You can't manage Dublin as if it's Athlone or Letterkenny or Tralee, you know, all fine towns. But Dublin is an international city of scale and of importance. It needs its own governance. And we need to do... Britain's been criticised for a lot of things in recent years, but it did a very good job at introducing the mayoral system by putting in place coordination teams prior to putting in place the mayor. There's no point just putting in a mayor if the mayor doesn't have the money or the power or the coordination team. So that needs to be put in place, and we'll be pushing for that. And
well, ironically, that's
looking at that.
That's a point that John Moran, the mayor of Limerick, was making in the studio just before you arrived in. He was saying that is, of course, one of the big challenges is if you're not CEO, it's very hard to command that kind of resourcing and support.
And the resourcing, you know, Dublin City Council, Richard Shakespeare will tell you, he says, I'm responsible for 12% of the expenditure in the city. The rest is controlled by central government. In most countries or most cities, that's about 40% is the local authority is responsible. And that's why we need to change the governance in that way. Something else I think that is massively important is we need to have a proper marketing, promotions, communications function for the city, which in many ways is what, if you look at London, for example, that's how they drove the mayoral office in London. Because how do people know what's going on in the city? How do you manage the brand of the city? And I'm not talking for tourists. I'm talking actually for people in greater Dublin. And our focus in the plan was less about tourists. There is some elements in that. But really, how do we get people from greater Dublin going into town, as we all used to do as kids? How do we get them going into town now? What do they go in for? How can we excite them? How can we get that to happen?
Are you optimistic that the task force's recommendations will come to fruition?
I'm optimistic. I am cautious around the timing, and I really want to push, and I want to hear it. I want to see it in the manifestos. I want to see it in Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, the Greens, Sinn Féin, Social Democrats. We've talked with all of them. And I expect to see a commitment in their manifestos to delivering this.
If you want to see the task force report, if you Google it, it is not a complex read. It is available there for download. The chair of that task force, of course, David McRedmond, also chief executive of On Post. David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.